Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Blast Podcast, a show where we believe movies can be more than just movies. I'm your host, Steve Watts, joined as always by my co-host, Big Nut. And today we have an episode that I don't think Ty was looking forward to initially, but I'm glad we're on the same page heading in. We're going to kick this thing off talking about Y2K before diving into a couple of Christmas-adjacent movies. Before we dive in, let's hear a word from our sponsor.
Hey everyone, Heath Ledger here. I'm happy to announce that the next version of the Blast movie app is officially in development. Expect a big overhaul of everything theater related. We have some big collaborations coming up in 2025 that we are so excited to tell you about when the time is right. Until then, thank you for all your constant support and stay tuned.
Ty, what's your favorite comedy of all time?
Ooh, it's the easy answer. Scratch that. I was going to say Superbad. That's too easy. My actual favorite, blast favorite, is 21 Jump Street.
Nice. Yeah, you've told that story once before. That's a good one. My favorite is Trainspotting, which, have you caught that yet or no?
No, and I would have never guessed that's a comedy.
It is hilarious. I actually think it is a Tyler movie. It's only like 83 minutes to kick it off, and it has Ewan McGregor. So that's like two of the checklists, right? It's interesting because we're talking about comedies today, and I feel like it's hard to talk about comedies without talking about the current state of comedy movies. It feels like we don't get many in theaters nowadays. Am I right?
I feel like we were just having this conversation. I don't know if it was on the pod or off, but it's very hard for these movies to get made these days because production studios are afraid of them because of viewer backlash. You don't know what comedy is safe and what isn't. And we've lost the beautiful art that is a comedy. I don't think I've seen a gut-wrenching comedy in 6 years, 7 years. It's been a while.
Jackass Forever had you laughing out loud in the theater. I know it.
Top 10 of that year. And there also, like, those comedies, I think they made a lot of their money on the back end, with DVDs, with rentals, and now that streaming's taken over, I think that's just out the door now. It's hard to use that as a big bet for a studio this now.
I honestly think, and I want to get into this a little bit more later, but I feel like the big reason for the lack of comedy lately is a lack of both A, like, tried and true comedic directors, and B, tried and true comedic stars. Like the people who you used to think of as comedic stars, Jonah Hill, he's moved into a much more serious direction, except for executive producing this, of course. But like in general, I mean, like The Rock is doing Fast and Furious now and all these shitty action movies that don't really do anything. I feel like we don't have any of those, and we definitely don't really have like a Judd Apatow of our generation yet.
Who was the last of like the dying religion that is comedy? I would say it's Will Ferrell, probably.
I would make the argument for Sandler. I think he's still clinging. Mystery 2.
I'm going to throw him for the 90s. Like 80s, what? You've got like Eddie Murphy, 90s, mm-hmm. Sandler, early 2000s, probably Vince Vaughn, maybe Owen Wilson. Then 2010s, you've got Will Ferrell, and now 2020s question mark.
Yeah, it's kind of like it. 2010s was also like that Kevin Hart, The Rock team up era where they were kind of in everything, and even Jack Black is in there. But it feels like, I mean, when these people are the funniest, they're not very old. Like Will Ferrell is getting up there now, and it's not as funny when he's like got gray hair making these same stupid little jokes. So it's an interesting like spot we're in right now where movies are shifting towards being more serious and the comedy feels more like black comedy than like anything lighthearted or upbeat, really. Even this is pretty dark comedy, I would say, for Y2K.
That's what I was going to ask you is, do you think 10 years ago this is just a comedy? I feel like this was greenlit because it had the horror element in it. But the first 20 minutes is like your standard super bad high school comedy.
It's possible. I don't know though, because Y2K, like as a movie, I could feel the passion behind Evan Winter and Kyle Mooney, how much they wanted to make this movie. Did you like, I just felt that in every scene, like, okay, these are two people who actually really cared about making like a great horror comedy.
It was fantastic. I mean, we can jump right into it. Like, what was your experience with this movie off the rip?
So theater experience was pretty funny here. I got to the theater. It was a longer line than I've ever seen at this AMC for Moana 2 or Wicked or Gladiator 2. I don't know what it was for. It definitely was not for Y2K, though. Y2K, I walked into the theater. There was one other person in there, just a solo going in, and a couple other people trickled in as the trailers came to a close. But in all, I think it was me, three other solos, and a couple that were probably like 6 years old. I was laughing my ass off through this entire fucking movie. I could not believe that I was the only one doing it. Everybody else was dead silent. And no spoilers here, but when Fred Durst and the, what's her name? She plays like the videographer person.
I do not know her name. I don't think you're supposed to know her name. We'll get into that later.
Okay. Well, they get up on stage. The old couple stood up and walked out. I couldn't
You're
believe
kidding.
It. I was
okay, but like they're 60, man. Like I could see why people are frustrated with the dumb fun that is in this movie. It just so happens you and I are, this is right up our alley. This is great.
It was awesome. I walked out. I didn't stop smiling for the rest of the day. It was awesome.
You got a blast a movie grade for it?
Blast grade A+. Movie grade, I'll stick with a strong A-.
Whoa, an A+ blast grade for Y2K. Very cool.
Mm-hmm. This is the most fun I've had at a theater in a long, long time.
I think you said it. I think it was like the first belly laugh movie you've seen in how long?
A long time. Bottoms from last year had a couple of moments, but it wasn't like straight through the entire movie that I was just dying.
So you had said before I saw the movie that you weren't confident that it was a Thai movie. What did it remind you of that you felt like it wouldn't be a Thai movie? Like, what was it about it?
I just didn't know if you're like, this movie reminds me of Pineapple Express.
Okay, that's funny you say that. I get a hint of This Is the End, a hint mm-hmm. of Superbad, a hint of Terminator. There is a lot of things going on, a hint of Stranger Things, but it all meshes together so well. And I think that it does a great job of roping me in with that super bad-esque high school comedy and then the over-the-top horror comedy elements from like a This Is the End, tying it in with like an apocalyptic state like Terminator. I had a ton of fun here. I, similar to you, went this morning. It's like a 12 o'clock show at an AMC. Theater was popping. Obviously not for Y2K. It was all for Moana 2. Bunch of kids mm-hmm. running around the main lobby, but I go to sit down for Y2K. For the first time ever, I was the only person in the theater. I am so happy that I finally accomplished this. I sat right smack dead in the middle, and I caught myself chuckling for about 90 straight minutes. I caught myself sitting on the edge of my seat a couple of times. There are a lot of like great pivotal moments, shocking moments that I'm sure we're going to dive into that I wasn't expecting from a 2024 horror comedy. This movie's really smart. It takes a lot of bold risks, makes a lot of bold choices. And I'm just, this is a very pleasant surprise here. Kind of like Hitman for me. I would give it a blast grade of an A. I wish I had a bigger crowd for this, and a movie grade A-. Like it's pretty damn good.
It's really well made, man. For what this is, it just blew my expectations out of the water. I don't know how this has 44% on Rotten Tomatoes. I feel like Rotten Tomatoes is usually very skewed by the expectations of critics going in. This is exactly what I was expecting going in, but a little bit better. So I just am a little lost at that score, and I hope it doesn't turn people away from seeing this movie.
I can't lie. I didn't watch a single trailer. I didn't see anything in a movie theater. The only thing I had seen was a scene between the kid from Defending Jacob, our main character, Eli, and Rachel Zegler's character, and them talking at the convenience store and him just meatballing that conversation. That's all I knew about this movie. I didn't know it was a horror comedy until you told me it was. If I didn't know anything and the robots started killing kids at a teenage party, I don't know how I would have reacted.
That's like when Jake showed up to Worst Person and had no idea it was in Norwegian.
Brother was in for a lot more than just subtitles.
Yeah. 93 minutes for this movie. This keeps it tight. It is very fast paced. There's not a second to be bored. And one of the best things that Y2K does is establishes stakes. This is something that I feel like you and I agree is a big problem in movies lately, especially in bigger franchises like Star Wars or Marvel, where actions don't really have any consequences. Our main character, Eli's best friend, Big Nut, gets killed off in the first like 20 minutes of this movie, which, spoiler alert, but I could not believe it. I felt like that he was going to be in this whole movie. The way it was marketed made it seem that way, certainly. And there are a lot of other like deaths in this movie that happen very quickly before you even really have a chance to process like what's happening.
Well, let's dive into that. It's not even the fact that deaths happen quickly. It happens to the two characters that you feel like are going to be great, pivotal, not just comic relief, but like have great character arcs in this movie. And they die off at the end of the first act. Big Nut, I remember thinking as the movie's going, like, all right, kids are starting to die, but our two main characters are safe. This is like a buddy movie. And then he gets stabbed through the heart 30 minutes into this movie. And then the kid from American Vandal, the stoner bully who was cracking me up, I thought was going to be a great comic relief character, dies in the funniest way possible.
That is by far my favorite gag in the movie. For those of you listening who haven't seen this and don't care about spoilers, this guy is like the ultimate bully, just absolutely hates our main characters. Says he like almost went semi-pro in rollerblading, puts him on, sees a basketball hoop's full, angled up, and he's like, all right, let's roll, bitches. And then he gets up on there, falls back, cracks his head open, and he's gone for the rest of the movie.
Dead right there. So two pivotal characters dead at the end of the first act, something I was not expecting. Not only is it funny, but just crazy stakes here established early. I will say, honorable mention for funniest scene. It's more so like a long-standing bit, but the two rejects that make it out into the second and third acts, the kid that dies by CD, his freestyling throughout the movie. But when they have the swing set heart-to-heart and they end up just spitting bars at each other instead, I thought that was great.
My other like funniest scene is Kyle Mooney's death scene, where he's got like the little stick game from the 90s. He starts charging at the robot, gets his arm cut off, turns to the main characters and goes, guys, I don't like this. This is so genius. Also, great cameo in this movie is her ex-boyfriend, Rachel Zegler's ex-boyfriend. That's Chad from Scream, right?
Yep. Great, nice. Great intro with that guy. What was his name in this movie? Jacob, maybe?
I'm not sure.
Who cares? But he was a part of one of my other favorite parts of this, The Collective. The guy from Kyle Mooney from the VHS store. Rachel Zegler's ex-boyfriend and just a bunch of stoners. And they call themselves The Collective with a K. Thought it was the funniest fucking thing.
This whole movie, I mean, I just can't believe nobody else in my theater was cracking up, but it kind of made my experience better. I was like, is everybody else not in on this joke? What's happening here?
Yeah, it was fantastic. Another fantastic element. Could not believe it. Rachel Zegler, her stock is through the roof after this movie.
I can't believe it. I hated Rachel Zegler heading into this movie. Not hate's a strong word. I very much had no interest in seeing Rachel Zegler in any movies heading into this. And watching this made me forget that I really don't like her as an actress.
All is forgiven with the Snow White controversy. Maybe I'm going to show up for it. I thought she was fantastic.
She was really funny. The porta potty kiss scene, or almost kiss scene, is another highlight of this movie. You have the robot like playing out of a boombox this love song, and the two main characters just sliding down a hill, just shit flying everywhere from the porta potty. It's so good, man. I every bit in this movie landed for me.
Yeah, I thought it was fantastic. I thought Kyle Mooney as a director, too. I mean, did a great job. You mentioned it before, shows a lot of passion here, but between some of the camera work, the great direction, I don't know. I'm excited for whatever this guy does next.
I absolutely am, too. I was excited when I saw he was directing a movie. I had no idea this existed until, I think, 3 weeks ago when I saw whatever movie we were going to for the pod. Got a trailer for this. And I saw the shot of the Varsity Blues VHS coming and hitting somebody in the head. And I was like, I'm in. Let's do this. But, I mean, there's so much style in this movie for a directorial debut. Like, the editing is awesome. There's a lot of quick cuts, and it just adds to the comedy. I think that this is a great sign as maybe a potential next Judd Apatow, somebody like that.
I could see it. I also want to give Jonah Hill his flowers. Seems to be attaching himself to creative and exciting projects. Like now, mid-90s and now Y2K. I think Jonah Hill's kind of found his pocket outside of the acting world, but still maintaining some prowess.
I think so. I would love to see another Jonah Hill flick too. Did you ever watch mid-90s or no?
No, but it seems right up my alley. It seems like maybe more serious Y2K, Hold the Robots?
A little bit, yeah. There's definitely a lot of laughs to be had, but it is also a pretty heart-wrenching movie.
Have you seen Summer of 84?
Remind me?
Kind of. Well, I don't want to give it any spoilers, but has a mid-90s feel, except mid-80s feel, where neighborhood kids believe that their neighbor...
I recommended this to you.
No, you didn't.
Yeah, I did. This is on Shudder.
It's fun.
It is. And maybe this is like where comedy is headed. Just these fun little like adventure comedy kind of things. And if horror is the avenue it goes about this, I mean, this isn't scary at all. So, I mean, it might turn a few people away, but I think it opens the door for a lot of other new fun jokes.
Yeah, like I was mentioning before, I feel like comedy needs some kind of other pocket attachment. Like, okay, this is also a 2000 theme movie, or it's also a horror movie. No one wants to make a comedy for some reason, so let's hide it or disguise it as something else, like a Trojan horse.
Which, by the way, I mean, did the 90s, do you have a love for the 90s that contributed to your love of this film, or was it just a pure love of the comedy?
It was just the comedy. Obviously, this was before our time, man. Like, I was born in the year 2000, so I didn't even understand the whole Y2K fear of technology ending the world kind of thing. It was just a matter of this movie rocks. It seems to do a good job. Like, with the computer bits, I thought were all great. All the little nods with the VHS tapes. It was nice to see a VHS rental store. That's part of our time.
Yes. Mm-hmm. My sisters are 7 and 10 years older, so I grew up like watching all the 90s shows. I mean, Hey Arnold, you know, is still one of my favorite pieces of media of all time. And I, in general, feel a great sense of nostalgia for the 90s. And it makes me excited when movies are set then, man. Like, mid-90s nails it. This nails it, too. The way the tech is, I just love the feel of this decade when movies are set then.
I have no complaints. I mean, I don't know if it was the 2000 aesthetic, but I had a blast with this movie. I don't really have much other to say. Just a great time. Where does it rank in your top 10 of the year?
Number three.
Okay. I think it's number four for me. Like, I'd still go Challengers, Hitman, Dune Part 2, and then I think I'm going to plop it right under Dune. This was a really fun time.
I have Heretic, Twisters, and then Y2K as my top three right now.
Twisters that high is crazy to me.
Such a fun time, man. It's such a fun time. If I didn't go see that at Hollywood Palms with Lem, it would not be in my top three.
Fair enough. Hey, that's what we love about Blast.
I do want to close out this little Y2K segment, though, with a quick like little question to you, I guess. Is it time to declare it the age of the indie comedy? Like, do you think that for the next 10, 15 years, we're really only going to get these little smaller independent comedies before we make any sort of transition back to the blockbuster numbers wise?
Yeah, probably, because it looks like this movie is going to flop, unfortunately. Please go see it. It's fantastic. We need more movies like this. But if anything, this will be the only avenue for comedy. I don't see a big blockbuster getting picked up in the next 5-10 years. So, yes, this is the avenue for a while.
And not only that, I'm thinking back, like, from 2020 on, let's set this COVID in forth. I'm thinking of the best comedies, and I have like Borat 2 and King of Staten Island as my favorite from 2020. King of Staten Island, did you watch that or no?
Nope.
Oh, dude, I think you would like that one too. The next year, Inside, Bo Burnham, and Zola, two, again, just masterful movies. Triangle of Sadness goes on to win the Palme d'Or in 2022. And then last year is kind of the anomaly with Barbie being like one of the most popular movies of the year, a total blockbuster and a comedy. And I mean, 3 out of 4 is a pretty good track record. This is my favorite comedy of this year. We're hitting 4 out of 5 here. I think that it's just going to be low budget kind of flicks until there is some proof that movies like this can actually bring an audience to the theater again.
I really hope it happens soon, because I think next to horror, I think comedy might be my next favorite.
Well, we're talking a lot about horror comedies. Are you in for a quick draft?
Let's dance. We doing 3 or 5?
Let's do 5.
Okay. You start.
I have to go American Psycho at the 1.
You fucker. all right. I'll take This Is the End, and I'll take Y2K at the turn.
Wow. Nice. In the top 2. I'm going Scream at the 2. You give it to me or no? Yeah?
Fine.
Okay. I don't know. Scream at the 2. And then I'll go Jennifer's Body at the 3.
I only need 1?
No, you 5. Need 2.
Okay. For sure. I for sure want to do, if you're doing Scream, I want Thanksgiving.
Nice.
And then does Scary Movie count if Scream counts?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay.
Dang, I kind of want a Scary Movie there. I'll go with Tucker and Dale versus Evil at my 4. I think that is so awesome. I don't know if you've seen that yet, but I watched it for a film class, actually, and just died laughing the whole time. And I'm trying to think here. Number 5, I'm going the nostalgia pick. Great theater experience. Happy Death Day.
Okay. You know, I never saw the first one in theaters, but I vividly remember the second one in theaters. Goofy movie. Goofy.
Very.
At my 5, I'll take The Menu, one of my favorite movies of 2022.
Nice. Good choice. Good choice. It's one of my favorite like little subgenres, and we kind of missed that in the October series, but maybe next year we'll have a little horror comedy episode or something, because, I mean, I can't believe we haven't done an American Psycho episode yet.
We're running out of time, man. I mean, I don't know. My Sigma era is ending. I think we've transitioned past. Now I'm Big Nut.
You're Jazzercise Ty now?
Yeah.
Nice. All right. Let's talk Die Hard.
Let's talk Die Hard. Is it a Christmas movie?
Are Christmas adjacent movies in general Christmas movies? I would say no. And I think Die Hard falls in that category. I don't think I think for it to be a Christmas movie, it should like kind of be emblematic of Christmas values, whether that be like family, love, peace, whatever. I think that Die Hard goes against all of those things.
I do think it's a Christmas movie. I think that Christmas adjacent does count as Christmas movies because people specifically around Christmas time watch this movie. Therefore, I indicate it as a Christmas movie.
I think that is the best argument for it. I don't think that having the argument of just because it is Christmas time during the movie is like valid at all.
Oh, ridiculous. Iron Man 3 is a Christmas movie? Give me a break. No one's watching that shit.
Exactly. That's maybe on my draft board later.
Oh, you confuse me.
Bruce Willis, man. It's so sad. I mean, do you think this is his most famous role ever or no?
It has to be. John McClane is probably his most iconic character. He's certainly had, I think, better performances. I mean, you can pry pretty much any of them, but two that come to mind, Pulp Fiction and Unbreakable, I think are his two best.
Wow. You're not going to...
Where would you actual go? Sixth best. Sense?
Yeah, his actual best is Sixth Sense for sure.
I think he's better in Unbreakable.
Sixth Sense, I think, is the only movie where he actually like really has emotion. I was going to throw out an honorable mention, Looper. I think he does great.
Looper's, hey, Rian Johnson.
Rian Johnson. Kind of a forgotten movie, too, weirdly. This should be... I feel like Looper will have a cult following in 5 years.
We should do a Looper like movie swap sometime. I enjoy that one. We'd have plenty to talk about.
Yeah, JGL. But,
yeah, there you go. Well, Bruce Willis, man, that one's just so devastating. I mean, it's not like we lost, you know, another 20 years of great Bruce Willis performances. He basically just did like Die Hard 2 through 25 until the wheels came off. But I don't know. It's sad to see one of the greats from when we were growing up. I watched a bunch of these movies with my dad, and to hear he had to retire because of his dementia just failing him. I mean, it's just heartbreaking.
Yeah, it's hard to believe. And I feel like with action hero, like actors, at least especially, it's weird when they like come down to the human level and we kind of see like, oh, wow. You know, like if Sly Stallone did like went down the Rocky path and did come down with a horrible disease or something, it's hard to believe when these things happen, because
it's kind of Bruce, like Christopher Reeve from Superman.
Yeah,
when he became paralyzed. Yeah. I mean, he's literally Superman. I mean, it's about as heartbreaking as it gets.
I want to see that. Did you see they made a new documentary about him?
If it's still in theaters, I'm going. I think that would be beautiful.
Super, super limited release. But one that I would like to see. He did a John Carpenter flick too. He was really good in that as well. You should check it out.
So fun.
He's having a lot of fun. What about Rickman? Alan Rickman also unfortunately passed away at a fairly young age. And it makes this movie kind of a time capsule. It like brought me down a little bit watching this, just knowing, I mean, that these people just aren't around anymore.
Yeah, one of the greats is gone. And funny enough, Alan Rickman was always Hans Gruber for me. When I watched Harry Potter for the first time last week, I was looking at it and I was like, holy shit, that's Hans Gruber. So most people, I think, would consider him as Severus, but that's Hans to me, man.
Yeah. Which do you think he's better as, Hans Gruber or Severus Snape?
You got to go Snape. Takes it way more seriously. It's fleshed out through 8 movies. Die Hard, he's a campy 80s villain. He may be a smart villain, but I don't think it beats Snape.
I think I agree. Snape is my top role for Rickman. I actually have another one slotted between that and Gruber, though. Do you know what it is?
Is it, shit, what did we just watch? Love Actually?
No.
Hey, I don't know.
It is Galaxy Quest. In Galaxy Quest, he plays like a Spock ripoff, and he's actually really, really funny in it. And it's this weird, like, little tone shift from the serious roles that he usually is.
is it crazy to compare him to Philip Seymour Hoffman, someone that can do it all, but takes every role he does? I don't know if seriously is the right word. You can just tell that, one, he's great at what he does, but he also loves what he's doing. Like, Seymour Hoffman, his passion just flowed through the screen. I feel like Rickman, it's the same thing. Anytime he's on the screen, he's so magnetic.
Yeah, that it's not a bad comp. It's just an interesting one. Like, Alan Rickman, when you look back at his filmography, he really did only have those, like, kind of, I mean, Harry Potter kind of took over his career for a long, long time. And it's an interesting what if for me, if he branches out into some different, like, sector of roles, because I think he does have the same talent as Hoffman. But Hoffman just had a chance to go into so many different projects. Like, you have a PTA movie with him. You have a Charlie Kaufman movie with him. You have Mockingjay as his blockbuster route. Like, all these weird little, like, I don't know, anomaly movies that he takes part in.
Hoffman is the what if for Rickman. Like, Rickman went the big money route, the one iconic role. Hoffman did it all. He was volume shooting.
It's a pretty good take. This is a weird thing that just came to mind for me. Where has John David Washington been?
What are you talking about? The creator?
I feel like I haven't seen him since, like, Malcolm and Marie.
I can't tell if you're being funny. The Creator came out last year.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Wow.
It was a great movie.
That's sad.
What happened?
That was in my top 10 of the year. I completely forgot it even existed.
Ouch. Ouch. Action movies are dead.
Yeah, sci-fi movies are dead. Action movies are alive if and only if The Rock is in. Back to Die Hard. I want to talk about a scene in Die Hard that just blew my mind. And that is when Hans Gruber interacts with John McClane. He kind of runs into him and McClane gives him the gun. The first time you saw this movie, did you think that the gun was loaded?
I honestly did. The first time I watched this, I was a kid. I did think it was loaded because Hans, we didn't even talk about that, does a great job of trying to disguise himself on the fly. He gets caught by McClane, and instead of trying to do the big bad villain face off with McClane, he pretends to be one of the hostages that escaped. He memorizes one of the guy's names, Clay, Bill Clay. And I thought McClane bought it. I mean, why wouldn't he? But I think this movie does a great job of always being smart. Not only is Hans Gruber an intelligent villain, John McClane is a genius protagonist.
Besides the no shoes, I feel like he could have, he kills a lot of people that have shoes on before he runs through the broken glass. That's always been my gripe. You got to steal some shoes, man.
Well, he does get caught. I mean, Gruber notices the shoes, and then his goons come out of the elevator. McClane starts spraying, dives off into one of the offices, and immediately Gruber's like, shoot all the glass. Like, let's make it hard on this guy. So by the time shoes were an option, he had already had shards of glass, like, all up in his feet.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I think that after he kills, like, the very first guy, who is it? It's Carl's brother. You gotta steal the shoes. This was Morgan's first Die Hard experience. We watched this together, and her reactions were pretty funny. Seeing her Snape in this role was pretty hilarious to watch. And she had also no idea that the gun was unloaded. And that's just an all-time great, like, twist that only takes 2 minutes to pay off.
Yep. Another great element of this movie and why I think it's one of the greats is that it's disguised as a buddy cop, essentially. You have two cops, one in the mix. You got John McClane trying to save the day in the building. And you've got Al outside, the Lone Ranger cop that believes John McClane is trying to help him. They're having these great conversations over the radio. They've never met before. I think that element is the cornerstone of this movie, the heart of the movie. And that's why it makes it special.
one small gripe with Al. Or maybe this is with John. I don't know who it's with. But when John's trying to get Al to stay and Al's starting to drive away, do you think he had to keep shooting the car? Like, I feel like after you hit him a few times and you see like, oh shit, he's going off the road, you probably don't have to keep gunning him down until he like jams his car like half vertical over the side of a ledge. I feel like
stop
he goes,
driving.
He's trying to get some backup, man. John should know. He's a cop. He's a cop.
Yeah.
I don't know. I love that dynamic, though. I also love Argyle. Argyle's on a heat check this entire fucking movie for me. He's so funny.
Yeah. I love all the side characters here. Even the, what's his, the goon, Hans's right hand.
Carl?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He was a menace. He's like the standard 1980s action star, because McClane, he's not built like your prototypical action star. Like, if you notice, before Die Hard, you've got 1982, First Blood, you got Stallone jacked out of his mind. 1984, Schwarzenegger's the Terminator. In 87, he's the Predator, or not the Predator, he's fighting the Predator. And then in 88, we get Die Hard with Bruce Willis, kind of just a guy. He's not perfect. He's certainly not roided out like Arnold or Stallone. He kind of just looks like your average Joe. And it paves the way for a new era of action stars. You've got, in the following year, Patrick Swayze in Roadhouse, Sam Elliott in Roadhouse. They're just built like average Joes. They're just in good shape. 91, Swayze and Keanu. And then 96, you've got Tom Cruise. Like, it starts transitioning away from the roided out action stars. It does.
I think the argument's a little weak because I think that the 80s were just the 80s. I think that if you look back towards the 70s, you're also going to see some more average Joes. If you look forward to the 90s, of course you are as well. But like, I mean, even going back to your first ever action stars, these are like Western guys. John Wayne isn't fucking bulking right now. He's a little lanky guy. I think the 80s as just like a decade were roided and full of drugs and just over the top everything. And I think that maybe Die Hard had a role in getting things back to basics, but I don't think you can credit it for the full like change of an action movie stereo or archetype.
A change back to form is a better frame. Fair enough, okay. But it is clear, like, the look of the action star changes after Die Hard. Like, Arnold starts pivoting to, like, Jingle All the Way and Kindergarten Cop. Like, it does change. Like, Swayze and Keanu take over the 90s, and then you get Cruise in the 2000s. Hey, it didn't pan out, but Dylan O'Brien in the 2010s, it's just a different look. We're back to form, thanks to Die Hard.
Maybe so. I don't know. Is Die Hard in your top five action movies of all time?
Yeah, I think it corrects the list. I'd probably go Die Hard would probably be five, though. Predator's my favorite. I love Predator. Mission Impossible Fallout is phenomenal. I'm putting that on my list. Terminator 2. And then one that I watched last year, Mad Max Fury Road, is unbelievable. So those four, Die Hard. I think that's my five.
Wow. Interesting. You're an old man.
I like my 80s movies. What was your pop showing you when you were growing up?
Die Hard. Just maybe one too many times. You asked this question, actually, like when we were writing out this pod outline. And I started to think, is it a top five action movie of all time? In general, for most people, probably yes. But I started thinking back of movies, action movies that I think are better than and I would rather watch than Die Hard. And in no particular order, I got to all the John Wicks, all the Indiana Joneses, Gladiator, The Northman, First Blood, Assault on Precinct 13, any Mission Impossible, any Jason Bourne movie, Speed, Shaft. The list just goes on and on and on and on. is probably in like my top 50.
Ouch. That's insane. Yeah. I would rather watch Speed. I'd rather nice. Watch Point Break. This is probably like a top 10-er.
It's got to be. I think the Christmas movie discussion has kept Die Hard more relevant than anything that like the director could have planned on.
That is disgraceful. This movie's a ton of fun. Hold the Christmas.
It is, but if, okay, outside of December, like let's say it's a random afternoon in, I don't know, March. Are you going to turn on Die Hard, or are you going to turn, if your two options are Die Hard or Raiders of the Lost Ark, which are you choosing?
I'd rather watch Die Hard than Raiders of the Lost Ark.
That is a fucking crazy take. No way.
Not really? Not really.
I can't believe that.
The movies above Die Hard, I would rather watch in March. I think Die Hard's really good.
All right. Let's jump to Batman Returns.
He had enough. We're jumping.
Okay. Do you think a Tim Burton Batman could work today?
I honestly do. I think Batman is in a weird pocket where people like unique, different, one-off stories with Batman. I think that the gothic elements of Gotham, the world building, and how that world is established, I think works. The campiness, I'm not convinced can work, but there is an alternate universe, Tim Burton Batman, that I think works in 2024.
I think that you're right that a Tim Burton Batman could work, but it definitely could not work for me. And the reason is because Tim Burton Batmans could never work for me. I haven't watched this movie since I was 8 years old. I revisited it last week for the first time since then. And I realized I fucking hate this movie, dude.
Whoa. You know, I'm not a big Returns guy. I like 89. I do, but I'm not a big Returns guy.
89 is okay for me. It's not the best. I would rather watch Forever or anything besides Batman and Robin, though.
Okay. Well, you know, Forever is like one of my favorites, so no knock there. So you an anti-Keaton guy?
I'm not necessarily. I think if Keaton's in Forever, it works just as well for me. I think I'm an anti-Burton guy, but I'm also just an, I just don't know what it is about these movies that I just really, it just rubs me the wrong way. I don't know. I feel like this iteration of Batman doesn't work for me. And maybe it's because Batman kills willy-nilly in these movies, man. There's no regard for human life at all when Batman's like doing literally anything.
Yeah, I'm so tired of everyone crying about Ben Affleck. Dude, I need the old heads to come out and defend him, because Keaton was letting dudes blow up in Returns, no problem. It's kind of ridiculous that Batfleck got all the hate for that.
I honestly don't know where it came from. Like, is it just fans of the animated show who, because I feel like that's really the only media where Batman doesn't kill. He definitely kills in the Dark Knight trilogy. You can't convince me he doesn't.
Yeah, where?
Dude, he like is fucking going nuts in the Tumblr.
he kills Ra's al Ghul in Batman Begins by not saving him.
There you go. Yeah, but I mean, in general, I think that a lot of people get caught in Batman's crossfire.
Yes,
like absolutely. When he tips that semi, I can't believe nobody dies in that. aren't there people in the back?
He's got some clause in his code that's like paralysis and life support are okay. Does not constitute his death.
Fair enough. Speaking of, real quick, I just learned recently that the Joker lied to Bruce about who was where in Dark Knight.
Oh, you're kidding.
I didn't realize that for the longest time.
Yeah, well, of course he would go and save Rachel. That's why he goes after Dent.
God damn it. I don't. What are your top five Batman movies?
Dude, that's bad. That's bad. Were you watching the movie, or did you just like read something?
I was watching the movie. Last time I rewatched, I was like, huh, wait a minute. Cool. He was going to Rachel.
Yeah. The love of his life. Makes sense.
Which I honestly, I feel like The Dark Knight is a movie I haven't watched as much as other Batman movies.
Right. So since we get into that conversation, is The Dark Knight in your top five Batman movies?
It is not.
Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. This is going to be fun. All right. My five, 5-1, Mask of the Phantasm, 4, The Dark Knight, 3, Dark Knight Returns Part 1, number 2 is The Batman, and number 1, probably my like top blast movie of all time, The Dark Knight Rises.
Is it just because of the Steelers? Is it because Big Ben made it in the movie?
Well, yeah, considering I'm starting Jaylen Warren and Najee Harris next week. Yeah, I think so.
My top five from 5-1 starts at Batman Beyond Return of the Joker. I think that is a masterful movie. Number 4, I have The Batman. Number 3, and this is strictly favorites, not best.
God, yeah. The Doom That Came to Gotham?
Yes!
Oh my goodness.
I love that movie. It's such a rewatchable. It's so great for me. It's tailor-made for me specifically. Number 2, I have DKR. And number 1, especially after getting to see this in theaters, is Batman Mask of the Phantasm.
Very cool. That's one I wish I saw on the big screen. But easy to point out, neither one of us had Batman Begins. I am not a big Begins guy.
I feel like it's kind of forgotten. I think that if Batman Begins was titled The Dark Knight Rises, then we move to The Dark Knight, and then the last one is The Dark Knight Returns. I think that Batman Begins gets more respect. I think that people genuinely forget that it's part of that trilogy.
Come on.
I swear to God, I can't remember if it was Lem or Morgan, but one of them did the other day. They're like, because I said, The Dark Knight trilogy in some conversation. And they're like, trilogy? There's only two in there.
Don't listen to Little Nut, man. People know this is in the trilogy. But I think the thing about Batman Begins that's different is that the vibe of Gotham is way different. It's so dark and gritty and gross. And then in The Dark Knight, it just becomes Chicago. Literally, though. I mean, it looks like Chicago.
Have I ever told you the story? I was a Boy Scout when I was 8 years old, and we took a trip down to, I think it was ABC News in Chicago. And on our way to the station, we ran a way late because Dark Knight was like shutting down streets for filming.
Whoa.
And I remember, I'm almost positive that it was the rubble that Bruce stands on when he's looking at. Yeah.
That's sick.
Yeah.
That's sick. Imagine being in like your high rise and you see them film the semi truck flip.
Have you ever seen the people looking out at the filming of like the Tenet highway chase where all the cars are just moving forwards and backwards at the same time?
No.
I'll send you that after the pod. It's one of the funniest things ever. It's all like in slow motion too because nobody's that coordinated. But is Christopher Nolan gets Batman. I think that's clear from this conversation. Dark Knight is probably at my 6. It might be at my 7 after Dark Knight Returns. Dark Knight Returns is very, very good. But Christopher Nolan's great at getting Batman. I don't know if Tim Burton gets Batman in the way I want him to. I would probably prefer the Adam West version.
Oh, that's tough. I don't think you're crazy, though. I think Tim Burton does a great job of building Gotham. I'm not sure he's great at building Batman. And to tell you the truth, the best part of the Flash movie was Batman, was Keaton's Batman.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't directed by Tim Burton. So maybe it's a Burton problem.
Hey, man, the best part of that Flash movie is George Clooney's Batman, if you ask me.
Great cameo, George.
Making the big bucks. I definitely, okay, so I think we're in agreement there. Do you think Tim Burton gets Catwoman?
Who cares?
Dude, I hate this rendition of Catwoman. I can't stand
her.
It's
not great. It's not great.
What other movies has Michelle Pfeiffer been in?
Scarface.
Okay, there we go. My
Ant-Man
filmography,
Ant-Man and Quantumania.
My filmography for Michelle Pfeiffer coming in this pod was Uptown Funk and Batman Returns.
Ooh. Ooh. Well, mine isn't much better with two Ant-Man movies, so.
Yeah.
What about DeVito? Penguin.
Yeah, he also doesn't work for me. I hate, like, the worst part of this movie for me by far is like the black ooze that comes out of Danny DeVito's mouth. I think it's just because Tim Burton like painted his teeth black or something, but it is genuinely nauseating and not something I want in any Batman movie.
Get that brother a handkerchief or something.
Jesus Christ.
Don't you notice that? And especially after the Penguin and even the Batman, Oz Cobb and both of those is just night and day. I mean, it's a hair of recency bias watching the campy but dark DeVito and that rendition of Penguin.
Is DeVito like your dream build? Just missing leg day every single day?
That's my dad's dream build. He's going to
kill me. His body in this movie is the weirdest thing ever. I don't know why Burton changed it like that. Like, did you notice this?
I mean, he looks weird. I mean, he wanted him to be built like Penguin.
I guess. I don't know. What do you think of Christopher Walken in this movie?
Get him out of here. Is he properly cast in anything except like Deer Hunter?
I liked him in The Dead Zone, Stephen King adaptation. You ever seen that?
No.
He has a very famous line with his classic like stressing of syllables where he goes, "The ice is gonna break."
Oh, yeah. I know that. Yeah.
There we go.
I think he's good in Wedding Crashers.
I can't even remember him in Wedding Crashers. Yeah, it's been a while.
I still can't understand why he's in Dune. What's he doing there?
I feel like I don't know, maybe Denis Villeneuve is a huge fan of Batman Returns. Who knows? What would you give like your blast in movie grade of Batman Returns?
Oh God. Blast grade C, movie grade C+. It's fine. I'm fine with it.
I'll probably go D and D plus.
All right. Cheers.
I feel bad for picking this. There's so many great Christmas adjacent movies, and I fucking landed on Flipper DeVito.
Hey, this is better than Iron Man 3, and I cannot believe you like that movie. That's crazy.
It's good. It's better than a lot of MCU projects. It's definitely better than Ant-Man and the Wasp 2.
It is. But it's definitely bottom, like, 8 MCU for me.
Oh, boy. Let's get into the Christmas adjacent draft. Let's get this over with.
5?
5. You can lead it off.
Nah. Black Christmas.
Nice. I thought about... Okay. I'm going to be honest with you. I didn't put that on my draft board because I thought that was more Christmas horror. And I consider, like, Krampus and that... separate from like the rest, but
really
I concede it to you, like you can have it. My first pick though is going to be Prometheus.
What?
Yeah, takes place on Christmas Day.
It takes place on Christmas Day.
Yeah, they like when they wake up they're like, oh, Merry Christmas, Merry Christmas.
Oh my goodness.
Mm-hmm. Reach. Yeah, sure.
I like it.
Thank you. And my second, Prisoner of Azkaban.
Well done. Well done.
Thank you.
Can I basically just take all Harry Potter movies? Like I'm
limit one for like each team, I think.
All right, I'll go Sorcerer's Stone. It's good. You have the better Harry Potter movie. I think I have the better charm Harry Potter movie for Christmas.
You might have the better Christmas Harry Potter movie, I would say.
But Prisoner of Azkaban is just unbelievable. But
it is.
We'll save that for another day. I am so due for a nerd out. Christmas, give me Rocky IV.
Nice. That was on my list. Oh boy, what do I take here? I won't take Iron Man 3 yet. I'm going to kick this off with Mothman Prophecies. That's my number 3 pick.
Have I seen that?
Have you not? It's Richard Gere.
Maybe? What's that one about?
This is, so basically, it's based on a true urban legend. So, Steve movie. And there was this place, I think it was called like Point Place, West Virginia, where all of a sudden, and this is like real history, everybody started seeing this like giant winged shadow creature with red eyes. And they called it the Mothman. And basically, like, he kept on showing around and stuff. And then this huge bridge collapsed in town and killed like a bunch of people. And then he was never seen again. So people like thought it was like a foretelling of doom or something like that. It was pretty cool.
Interesting.
Fourth pick, Diary of a Wimpy Kid.
How is that? Yeah, I guess that is Christmas.
Yep.
That is Christmas. Okay. I'll go Die Hard. I do nice. Like Die Hard.
Nice.
I'm really struggling to think of five here.
Uh-oh.
Does Catch Me If You Can count?
I think so.
I'll go Catch Me If You Can at five. That's a reach.
It counts if you... Actually, no, I'm not going to... my last pick, I'm rounding out the squad. Oh, you have one more.
No, that was five.
Oh, you're
right.
I just
did Die Hard and Catch Me.
Yep, okay. I'm rounding it out with Green Knight.
We could have done a 10-movie draft and you would have taken it. I would have never touched it.
Yep, I know.
Well done.
Honorable mentions, Bourne Identity, Christmas, Iron Man 3, Alien also takes place on Christmas. I had that as a backup if you took Prometheus. And then Little Women also. Very good.
Cool. Would Family Man just be a Christmas movie?
I think so. I think so that's too. Pretty Christmassy.
Thought so too. Worth an ask.
So I think we're pivoting next week from modern favorites to Christmas horror, if you're down.
Well, I was asking you about this. I can't remember if you answered, but what are we talking about besides Black Christmas and Krampus?
I have a wide list you are welcome to choose from.
We'll go down the list then.
So funny enough, real quick, before I close this thing out, I do trivia every Thursday night with a few of my friends. And last week we were down like so much heading into this final round, everything's worth more, everything like that. And one of the questions we got right that we heard a lot of groans from around the bar was, what word replaces holy in a 1984 Christmas horror film? You know what it is?
No.
Silent Night, Deadly Night, which is probably what I'm going to have you watch. I think you're going to love it.
All right. I believe you. I think your best wrecks are horror wrecks.
That's where my bag is the deepest. I was looking at my like movie stats the other day on an app that shall not be named, and it was my like top genre for the year was monster movies. What do you know? It's almost like I watched 60 fucking Frankensteins.
Where is my bag deepest? Sport movies?
Dad movies.
Okay. I agree.
Yeah.
I agree.
I think.
Fair enough.
Thank you all for listening to this episode of the Blast Podcast. Be sure to download the Blast Movie app. Either search Blast Movie app on the iPhone Apple App Store, or go ahead and go to www.blastmovies.net and follow the link there. You can also follow our TikTok and Instagram and YouTube. The links are in the description, but TikTok is at blast.movies, Instagram blast_movies_, and YouTube, just search up Blast Movies. Thanks so much again for listening, and we will catch you next week with some Christmas horror.